I think the first thing that we can first listed a list of concepts that are important for the language learner to have. I guess if you were in the session this morning, you've gathered that I'm a practical kind of person, and so it's not just to have it up here, but somehow get these concepts worked into experience so that we know through having had contact with other people about our own culture. So the first thing I've listed is a general concept important to the language learner in order to maintain their balance in a new cultural setting is to be aware of his or her own culture. We need to realize somehow that each of us represents one out of over 6,000 cultures in the world. And that should humble us a little bit. I think so often, you know, because we've grown up in America or wherever we have been, we feel that everybody, we're part of the majority. And so therefore, our way is the better way or the way. And so we just kind of feel that our way of life is what everybody else is striving for, right? Everybody wants to be literate. That's one of the assumptions that I think Americans make. And you're not very long on the field before you realize that not everybody does want to be literate. And so we need to somehow make people aware of their own culture. I think the best way to do that is get them in touch somehow, for you people who are in training, with people from other cultures. In my classes, in my intercultural communications class, I make them go talk to international students. I make them go visit international families. I push them out and give them something meaningful to ask about. What are your family roles, or how do you find a good wife for your son, or a husband for your daughter? Give them some little guideline, but make them start rubbing shoulders with people from another culture. And in most parts of America, we can do that today. Okay, be aware of their own culture. Everybody is immersed in his or her own culture, and we are just like everyone else, and so we don't realize how different we are until we're surrounded with people who are different from us. We wear our culture deeply, and everybody else wears theirs just as deeply. And I think that's what we fear we don't always come to grips with. It's kind of like a fish in water. And so along with humanity, with being a human being, is a cultural being, because we were born and brought up in some particular culture in the world. No culture is perfect. This is another concept that I think often we feel that we're so much better. I understand the Chinese feel they're better. I mean, what do those North Americans know? They've not been there at it near as long as we have. And, you know, so different cultures feel they're best, or maybe they're perfect, or they're right. But there is no such thing as a perfect culture. All are sufficient, because they wouldn't still be existing, right? But they all have weaknesses and they all have strengths. And so I think it's a healthy thing to get Americans to start thinking about things in our culture that we're not so proud of, right? Because we tend to look at our advanced technology, our advanced literacy, though we're not as literate as some other parts of the world, but we think we're pretty good. The things that we excel in our estimation, and we don't look at broken families, inability to control crime, all kinds of weaknesses within our society. So to recognize that we have weaknesses, other societies have weaknesses, we have strengths, other societies have strengths, so that people can go with a positive attitude and a certain amount of anticipation about what am I going to find in that culture out there, rather than are they going to make me change, you know, or where am I going to have to change. So the idea of looking for good in other places, I think, is a healthy one. And then another thing to remember that I think the language learner, as he approaches another society, needs to know that all cultures make sense to those within it. One of the issues that I hadn't really thought through until we got to the mission field was the issue of polygamy. And I was amazed. I had this concept that it makes sense. And so we listened to the way polygamy fit the society. And it took care of all the single women. Everybody got married that way. Any woman who lost her husband had another ready marriage. You didn't have to live unattended for a long time. Social security, that you married into a family, so a woman was taken care of for life. When her husband died, she wasn't just left. And so there were all kinds of benefits in the polygamy system, see? Now, many Americans Monogamy is Christian. Monogamy is it. And they won't even look at anything else. So whenever you find something in another society that really ruffles your feathers, then you need to think it fits the system. So I need to ask a few more questions and learn a little bit more of how it works and be able to work within a society like that and tolerate whatever that might be. And then the problem of ethnocentrism is related to our awareness of our own culture. Everybody is ethnocentric, thinking their culture is best, their culture is right, and we all use our own culture to judge other cultures. And so it's something we've got to watch for all the time. I think our American problem is that we think God has put his approval on us, right? Because we seem to be, you know, the center of things. And so therefore, what we do will be great for the world, right? So God, along with our culture, is really hard to beat. So we have to really make people conscious that a lot of the things that we stand for, even the idea of a Christian being able to be a growing Christian and not be literate. I mean, we think that if anyone's going to grow, he's got to be able to read the Bible, right? And so for us to think that maybe one could listen to tapes of the Bible and grow just as much as being able to read the Bible and grow, you know, or maybe some other method that could be used. So the idea of ethnocentrism is something that we have to come to grips with. And I think as we send people out to other places, we need to give them enough illustrations of how it works, because those people are going to be ethnocentric too, and they're going to be judging the newcomer, the language learner, by their standards, and they're going to be as heartless as we are often, right? So to understand there's something in the system out there that makes us all that way maybe helps us tolerate a little bit better, and I hope softens our criticism of other people. I guess I could give you a couple illustrations. When we were on the field, we lived out in the village for a while, and I watched a mother wash her baby, and she waited till the sun got high, and she took a gourd of water, put some water in her mouth, held it in her mouth until it warmed, and then spit it on her baby. And my response was, yuck. I mean, that's no way to clean a baby. I had my baby, and I had my towels and my soap and my warm water and so forth. And right away, you know, I was judging, can this baby possibly be clean? And so I had to do quite a bit of mental gymnastics to not say anything. And I've heard that when people go through the reservations and see babies tied on cradle boards, they express their opinion, you know, that baby's going to be so maimed for life. All they need to do is look at the adults. They're not, you know. It's just another way of treating your baby. And I say we've got to bring ourselves to the place where we say, does God care whether we tie our baby on a cradle board, whether we spit on our baby to get it clean, or those things are immaterial. And so for us to waste a lot of human energy fighting the system, and I never did start heating the water in my mouth and spitting on my baby, but I got where I wasn't critical of them. And so somehow we've got to take these monocultural people. I like that monolingualism can be cured. I think monoculturalism can be cured, right? And so we could have a button that would say that just as well. And I'm sure you folks would have lots of illustrations to put with it where your first response was, it can't be the right way. But as you sat back and held your tongue and watched, you realized their way works are right. So culturally, it wasn't worth getting all upset about. Okay, respect for the host culture is the next thing that I've listed. And I think when I came home from the mission field and began working with people in our country here, I realized how little natural respect we have for those who are different. We just, you know, if you have a Vietnamese family living next to you in the apartment complex or on the block or whatever, you don't think that Vietnamese family has anything to offer you. I mean, we just automatically write off anyone who's not like us. The people we want to get acquainted with are those other people that are like us, right? And we don't really have a lot of deep level use for people who have not mastered our language. You know, we just assume that they're not as fit as they ought to be. And this is a hard one, and I hope I have time to get a little feedback. Maybe I should take a minute, but I can't take too long or I won't get through my outline. But how do we be sure that our people we send to another country really have a respect for people from that country? I listed just a couple of things. Recognize that their answer to life's problems may be different from ours. but are still okay, because each culture, you know, we meet the necessities of life, you know, what we put in our mouths, the way we eat, the way we sleep, the how many families to a three-bedroom apartment. I know one of my language learners had to learn to manage in a three-bedroom apartment with a family of five in each bedroom. And, you know, we tend to think that's not right, particularly in our society, especially if you're the landlord, right? We don't approve of that. But their way of thinking was that all each family needed was a room. You know, probably where they came from, that's all they had for a family. And so we need to begin to distance ourselves a little bit from what we expect in life for us and realize it's going to be different for other people in life, and that's okay. Now, you know, how we can do that is, you know, is going to be another thing. Again, I think beginning to rub shoulders with people who are different is maybe the best way it's going to happen, where you see deeper than just the things that are different about the person. They're all crowded in that apartment, you know, and so therefore they can't be worth much. They don't have separate bedrooms for, you know, family members and whatnot. But when you get to know them, I think you soon will find that there's a lot of good stuff there. And maybe they know how to share better than our people know how to share, right? And maybe they can get more done as a group than our people can get done. Okay, the second thing I've suggested under having respect was willingness to follow the rules as much as possible. Follow their rules. So if we really truly respect people in another society, I think we shouldn't be always balking at the rules, but accept that life is different. Half a day cashing a check at the bank, right? Make the best of it. Good language learning practice time. Good time to meet somebody that maybe needs to hear the gospel someday or maybe needs to, you know, be a contact. But we're so time-oriented, that just kills us, right? We got more important things to do than a half a day to cash a check. And so we spend so much energy trying to make our system work in another part of the world, and we get so tied up inside that I think it keeps us from really moving ahead with life as well as we could if we didn't go with the idea things are going to be different. How are they going to be different? That excitement and curiosity and things that you can write home, things that you can, you know, record and adjustments you've had to make and be kind of excited about it. You'll find, then let them know that when they come home, they're going to find they're going to be upset with the way we operate here, right? Because they'll see all those neat things that go on in another place, and people don't even talk to you here, or people don't have time for you here. And so it's kind of a six of one and half a dozen of another, but we do need to be aware that they are people created by God. They didn't choose their culture any more than we chose our culture, and they're doing the best, and their culture is functioning, and why can't we respect them as people? Anyone want to add anything on respect? Anything you've discovered in your, you know, making sure you respect the people that you're trying to serve? Has anyone felt that has been a problem sometimes with people who've been out there? You know, we sort of feel like we're here and, you know, they're at some plane lower. What? Yeah. Okay, if you're in a society that's Buddhist or Muslim or whatever, and we know Christianity is best or the way, that kind of feeds into that as well, doesn't it? But I think we need to start trying to, again, so don't blame them, you know, don't put them down here, because that's where they are. That's where we should be able to see people, I think, all on a level. Now, true, we have the eternal life, we have some things that they don't have. But that doesn't really mean that we're superior in so many other ways, all right? And God can do great things with them, even as he's done in our society. Yes? That's right. I remember there were a couple of foods I just couldn't eat. It was really hard. When they gave me some of this stuff, it was just sick. And I didn't know what to do with it. But after we lived in a mud hut for a while, I found out the proper way to do it. We gave them our oatmeal, the family that we were living with. Find something that, you know, you can try them out on, right? They came back and we always shared whatever we had. And one day it was oatmeal, and the man of the house took it around and brought it back. Do you care if I give this to my first wife? And we said, no. It went, pretty soon the first wife comes, do you care if I give this to the second wife? And we said, no. And the second wife came, do you care if we give this to the goats? And I didn't care whether the goats ate it, you know. And so watch for, you know, polite ways when you, and I'm not saying we have to live exactly like they do, but I'm saying that when they have their ideas of what is modest and what is not modest, who are we to blatantly break that all the time in their eyes? I like Elizabeth Furnier's illustration. I guess she was balking against wearing the cloak over her when they were out doing field work. Her husband is an anthropologist, Bob Furnier. And he said, well, how would you like it if somebody from the South Seas came to Austin, Texas, where we lived? They were on the field, but when we go home, he comes to visit us and he runs around town in his G-string. And that's all he wears. And he lives at our house. How would you feel about this man? You know, the idea is you want to fit in. You want to be, so people can be proud of you, proud of knowing you, proud of being able to interact with you. And if it takes long sleeves, if it takes long skirts, if it takes men wearing long pants in hot weather when they'd rather wear shorts, that's what we need to be ready to do. And so I'm not saying that, you know, my husband has to become a polygamist, right? Just because they're all polygamists around. But when possible, I think we need to be ready to adjust our lives. Okay, expect culture shock and stress. I don't know how you do your preparation for such, but I read a real good book lately by Kim. Let's see, I've got the Jungian Kim, Communication and Cross-Cultural Adaptation. And she presents culture stress and culture shock as the initiator for action, which allows adaptation, which results in growth. And when some of my Biola students that were really struggling with culture shock, you know, from mainland China, and everything was wrong. I mean, I could just see the food was wrong, everything, the way she was treated by teachers was wrong, everything was wrong. And as we worked together through this book, she said, wow, this is a privilege to be able to be put under tension like this and be uncomfortable enough that I'm going to do something about it in order to adapt, and then I grow and I'm a richer person. So this cycle of stress, adaptation, and growth, I think we can tie that all together and realize that disequilibrium and internal stress then causes us to do some kind of adaptation. Either that, or, you know, you can pull away and remove yourself and not make it. There's always that possibility. But I think the way it should work is then move us into some kind of adaptation and move us into growth. And then this is a cyclical, continual thing that will go on as long as you're on the field. Whenever you feel stress, you have to do something about it. And the more you get used to thinking it through and adapting as far as you can or as much as you can, and then you grow and you make it. But there's going to be stress there all the time. And to help people face that, I think, is a helpful thing. There was a line that I thought was good in Kim's book. To the extent stress is responsible for suffering, frustration, anxiety, it also must be credited as an impetus for learning, growth, and creativity. I'll read that once more since I see a couple of you are writing it. To the extent stress is responsible for suffering, frustration, and anxiety, it also must be credited as an impetus for learning, growth, and creativity. So if we see that other side of culture stress, I think that makes us feel better, right, as people, because you realize that's the only way you're going to be making it, and you're going to be able to do what God has called you to do. And I think in thinking, I don't know, I haven't heard anybody else talk much in detail about culture shock or culture stress. I'm willing to come back to that if that's something that you want to discuss more. But I feel that communication is the heart of the adaptation process. And so the more you can make yourself get out and interact, even if it's with limited people, when you're under real stress, and be able to ask questions, to find out an explanation of things from the national, you know, make a friend. I think, well, I was going to say it's easier for men maybe than for wives with kids, but I don't think it's impossible there either. And it's easier for women? Hey, how about that? Because the men are so busy doing their job.
Well, in Japan, the men are all working from early morning to early morning.
Yeah.
Women have way more.
Okay, good. Well, I guess I guess I've heard that some women tend to withdraw with their children and figure their job is just keeping them happy at home. But I think it you can work it either way. But I think the idea of having someone locally that you're developing a real friendship with and able to communicate with is a real reliever of stress. Okay, then be prepared for the culture learning role. And I think that I've only written down a few aspects here. I'm sure I've not got a complete list at all. We've been talking a lot about the verbal, the language learning that we're trying to get them ready for. But I think we also need to prepare our language learners that there is a whole other field of nonverbal stuff out there that you're going to have to master. And show them how important gestures are, because people tune out. Whether you're saying the right words or not, they tune out if you, you know, are making the wrong signs to go with it. They don't get excited about your language if you don't have, if it's a language where you're supposed to throw your arms around when you talk, right? And if you're just letting it all come out your mouth and not, you know, any movement to go with it, the nonverbal is very important. You can sit certain ways that you offend people by showing them the sole of your foot in certain parts of the world. You can sit and show disrespect to God. I understand in Korean churches they have to sit with their feet flat on the floor. So God can really, is that true? Meet them? At least podium people don't sit with their legs crossed. And so all kinds of nonverbal things. And nonverbal, I think, is even harder than the verbal, because nobody writes books on how to learn the nonverbal. And so I think if I were getting pre-field people ready, I would take them through the variety of things, such as the body language, gestures, the eye behavior, space, how do we handle space, the idea that people may be standing too close to them for comfort, but you're not going to change them all. You're going to have to learn to deal with that, right, with people kind of nose to nose. Maybe you don't like the smell of their breath, but that's, you know, you're going to put up with that. I mean, warn them about some of these things that might be happening to them. Idea of smell and taste, the sensory perception. I can remember how surprised I was the last time I went to Nigeria that we were working with some church leaders and we were getting ready for a final banquet. They were having to honor my husband and myself. We had both been teaching. And I put on my perfume, and as we drove to the place, they told me how evil perfume was. And I had no clue. He said, our church has really had a problem with that. And I didn't even think that, you know, about that. In my time in Nigeria, I guess I didn't bother probably when I was out in the village, but I thought a banquet, you know. But you just have to kind of constantly be on the guard with the messages that you're giving. And we think people from another society smell, they think we smell. You know, we drink milk, we eat meat. There are things that make us smell. And so we have to realize that all these things are things that can make you feel uncomfortable in different places, but you can't change them. I remember talking to a group of Japanese students who were studying at Cal State University, and I don't know what my topic was, but in the course of the evening they told me how upset they got when they saw a student sitting with their feet on the coffee table, American students with their feet on the coffee table. That just was so upsetting to them. And I thought, well, we aren't going to change all those American students. You know, I mean, you're going to have to change if you're going to stay here, because we can't change the rules of the majority of society, right? And it's not offensive to Americans. You know, we can put our feet places where other societies wouldn't put their feet. And but if we go to Japan, then we've got to go by their rules and keep our feet off the tables, right? And so we have to constantly be alert to all those areas. The idea of paralinguistics, how do we say things? Do you talk in a loud voice? Do you talk excited? Do you talk soft? Do men talk different than women talk in that society? All kinds of things that are not spelled out in books, unfortunately, for each society. And so you just have to be in tune with all the possibilities. And I think the best thing to do is to start a little card file yourself and find things out and compare notes if you've got several language learners all working together. And I've seen at least one mission that has tried to give a starter sheet to them, as long as they don't look at that as the finished nonverbal that you need to know. I mean, a sheet or two of how not to offend people, you know, in the way you dress or the way you sit or the way you touch. You know, maybe it's not right to hug, and maybe you're from a hugging crowd. So all the things you need to get used to. I think we can do a better job in, you know, pre-field training maybe and alerting people to some of these things. Role relationships is another thing, culture learning, that they're going to have to deal with. What is it right for men to do and what is it right for women to do? What are the no-nos? I had a group of international women on a panel just a few months ago in a class I was teaching, and they were telling how hard it was when foreign women came and spent their time with the men in their society. The women got offended, and it just was not to be done. And so women are to associate and sit and talk with and socialize with women. And this is from four different countries. I was amazed at how they felt American women overstepped so often the boundaries that the society has set. So you need to, if you feel it's okay in your given situation, you ought to be checking it out with, you know, a few other people that are from that country to make sure that you haven't just made yourself comfortable and are offensive and turning people off to what you have to say and do. Often we like our arrangement of responsibilities better than the arrangements we find in other places, particularly when women seem to have to work so hard and get so little benefits, right? The Nigerian women get up, and our tribe got up early, early morning and worked till late, and it looked like the men were sitting around an awful lot. But we can't give women's jobs to men in another society. I don't think Christians are out there to do that, right? And so we just need to start to appreciate those women. The thing that I was amazed at is I saw more happy women in amongst the Kumwei than I find here in this society, you know? And so somehow we've got to prepare our people to see things differently and not automatically plunk our values on another society. They all function differently. And if the women are going to change, the men are going to have to change. And I don't think I want to be the one to have to rearrange the society that much, right? If God wants to do it in his own time, fine. But certainly the new language learner doesn't have to worry about that. Private property and space. Here again, it's very difficult when you don't get your privacy in another place. And I don't know exactly what the answer is, except that we can warn people about this. You know, as I said, when people stand too close or when people have the right to look in your goods when you're out or whatever, their rules are the ones we've got to be acquainted with. And often their rules work as well as our rules, but they're different, right? We found that we tried to make our help that we had when we were out there feel as much at home as possible, eat meals with us now and then and so forth. And we finally found he was taking my husband's socks out of the drawer. And right away we'd say, stealing, right? But he felt, I think, that he had the kind of relationship that if you're really a good friend, you can help yourself and use, you know, from that friend. After all, my husband had 14 pair, and he didn't have any. And so, you know, you have to begin to pull back and start thinking, trying to look through their eyes and perceive in their frame of reference and respond from their way. And if you've got a good friend, you can, you know, you can discuss these things with them and learn a lot. Another thing I've listed is spiritual orientation. I did my recent PhD work was on looking at spiritual powers, and I discovered that most of the societies of the world see quite a lot more spiritual activity in everyday life than we do. And so I think as Christians, we need to be aware of that and not spend so much energy trying to convince them that there are no such spirits in those trees or in those rivers or wherever they see all these spirits, right? When we get right down to the nitty-gritty, we can let them know that our God has power over them, you know, if that's a problem. But I think the idea of accepting a world that's put together differently and not trying to convince them that they've got to see through our eyes if we're going to be able to talk or be effective there. And so I think the idea of, and I get kind of excited when I go to another society to try and find out what's there, you know, and the way they perceive it, because they perceive things quite differently than we do. And when we get into Christian witnessing, it's important that we know those things. And the next thing I've got on my list, worldview. And worldview is not learned easily. Worldview is the assumptions and values and allegiances that a people have. And the kinds of things, I don't know. I guess what I probably would do in pre-field training is begin to let people know of the differences possible in worldview, like time-oriented versus event-oriented, people-oriented versus task-oriented, right? And so when people don't get to their work on time, or they don't, you know, get the job done or whatever because it was more important to interact with somebody they saw, that we'll be a little more tolerant. Try to get some concrete illustrations of things that often happen on the field and get them to begin looking at life like our worldview isn't God's worldview particularly, right? There are things probably that God likes about their worldview maybe better than ours. But God works in and through ours, and He's willing to work in and through theirs. So for us to try to bring about worldview change, you know, as a language learner, or being all uptight because they don't match ours, is what the new language learner needs to be aware of. The idea of, we see that wealth is in money, and so we're concerned with how people spend money. Many other societies feel wealth is in family. And I get real upset when I find someone coming in new in the society trying to convince a family they ought to quit having children. Does that make any sense at all? If the most valuable thing in the world you could have is children, and here, you know, is this person only been 6 months in the country trying to tell them that they've got five kids, that's enough. You need to understand the system. You need to understand how it works. And if they can't put money in the bank, or don't put money in the bank, or buy insurances or whatever, but have family around to help take care of you in all emergencies, we can begin to see things through different eyes. And so the language learner, I think, ought to be aware that there's going to be a different worldview out there, and it's going to be exciting to try to figure it out and learn where they are. Okay, I've got just a few things here on how to deal with these things, and then I hope you have time for either questions or your own suggestions to add to mine. We can go through these quickly. But I just wanted to give you a feel of the quantity of stuff that has to be handled through the culture and worldview and all. Okay, don't overreact, I think, is the biggest thing we need to realize as we go into a new society. And that's something that you have to kind of work gradually on. Being an anthropologist even, I was amazed at how I felt so deeply when I visited a Kenyan family who was studying in Pasadena, and the four-year-old was left taking care of the two-year-old while the mother went out and worked to get food to put on the table, and the three other kids were in school and the father was writing his thesis and not home at all. And right away I said, well, who takes care of the two and four-year-old? She said, oh, the four-year-old takes care of the two-year-old. And I don't know if it showed on my face or not, but I sort of died, because I brought up four kids and I know you don't leave four-year-olds taking care of two-year-olds. But, you know, about 3 days later in my anthropology class, it dawned on me, that's the African way. They teach their kids to be responsible, and they are. And, you know, all the time the kids are looking at mom as to what's acceptable behavior. So different. We put our kids in a corner with toys, and then all of a sudden we try to teach them to be valuable, you know. And so I thought, where did I go wrong, right? So the idea of don't overreact. Look deeper into what you're responding to see how it all fits together. Because the system, when you understand the whole system, it's not so appalling, right? When you see something that just really seems to hurt you, or you really have a hard time with, I would say don't overreact. Look deeper. Ask questions. Learn. Deal with it, you know, deal with it much more slowly. And then I think we can tell our people who are going through the language learning and culture adjustment, work within the system and learn new ways to function. And that excitement of being able to work this way when we're in this place, and when we come home work in a different fashion in another place, is a real gift, you know, to be able to do that. I've known people who have gone to England. They got any British people here, and have gotten so upset having to go to all the different stores to grocery shop, right? You've got to go to the butcher shop, the bread shop, the fruit stand, and so forth. And that's such a waste of time from our perspective, because we just go buy it all in one spot. And they've come home because of that. They couldn't handle that, you know? And why not say, hey, when in England, do as the English do, right? And just make a morning of shopping. But it's just so hard for us to change. So if we can figure we can work in that system, those folks work in it, we're capable, we're adult human beings, and we can alter our adjustment, and it will pay off in the long run. make a close friend, which I've said before, a national, and talk through the difficulties. Feel free to ask lots of questions and share what you're feeling and let them encourage you. If you find out why people are doing what they're doing or what the benefits are, you know, probably that lady who was criticizing the man who had five children, if she'd have, you know, asked more about society and security and life and, you know, who takes care of you in your older age, she could have learned a lot. But instead she just was, well, I can get you some birth control measures here. You know, you need to control your family size. And so I think the idea of talking things through and listening. I liked what we've heard about listening. Journal your feelings. This helps a lot of people when you're so upset emotionally to be able to write down. And you can always throw it away or store it away and pull it out later and see how the things that bothered you back that month, now you can handle this month. I think the idea of journaling is good. I've got a daughter who journals all the time, and I marvel, you know, at how well she handles her emotions that way. I've not been a natural journaler. It takes time for me, and so I've not done much journaling. But are any of you people who journal? And that's a relief, a release to you. And I think that's good. And then record your learning on various topics. I think this is healthy advice, because then you realize that you're learning little by little. I'd suggest that you have a, you know, a section or a notebook where you've got some pages for nonverbal, some pages for relationships, you know, things that you're observing. Brothers, maybe the fact that a husband is more loyal to his mother than he is to his wife. And we get upset about that. That's not supposed to be. But maybe in the other society it is supposed to be. They say you can get another wife, but you can never get another mother. You know, these little notes on relationships, and as you find yourself, that if you have something going by way of writing it down, I think it keeps you conscious that, well, I haven't noticed anything lately, I better get on the ball. You know, I've been so busy working on language that I haven't been doing cultural observation. And so that's why I like the idea of writing some notes. And part of my language learning class is they've got to keep their little notes going. And if they haven't learned anything in a whole day, I mean, they've been living with a family and out mixing with the people, I say, what's wrong? You've not been looking enough. You know, there surely are some differences that you can pick up. So by tomorrow, you better find some. Okay, values, those are all things that can be recorded. Test your stereotypes. And I guess it's hard to know what those stereotypes are maybe before you get to the field, but I think a typical one is that people who don't read aren't as good as people who do read, right? People who, for different places. People who are poor are not as valuable as people who are rich. I mean, that's something we just automatically are sort of fed in our society. And so you need to get beyond those. And the way you get beyond them is to begin interacting with somebody from that society and find out they're not all that way at all. I work hard on my Ethnic America class to get people to break stereotypes against blacks and American Indians and so forth that way. And then treat cultural resources as cultural differences as a resource, and figure that it's only through recognizing these differences that you're going to be able to have a rich ministry or a rich experience in their society. And so those are tremendous opportunities. And then my best advice, I think, is try to get your pre-field people into some kind of cross-cultural experience, even if it's only a weekend, living with a family, you know, that's from another culture. But then if you've told them, now watch for nonverbal, watch for value differences, watch for how parents relate to children, watch how they discipline. And so they're used to looking and understanding and accepting differences. I think, you know, it's better yet if it can be a longer time, but I think that that's something we can do in our society because we have such a nice mixture nowadays. And then we also could assign them an ethnic church under a leader from that culture. And so they have to learn to work under authorities that the people are different from them. And that's a healthy experience. I've had people assigned to black churches to work in this society. And, you know, we just go at life differently than the typical black church, I think. And so, you know, all the time you're saying, oh, how can he publish how much everybody gives? That's against the Bible. Well, you know, if it works, I'm sure there are things that we do that are against the Bible, right? And so just to kind of develop tolerance and recognize that you are different from other people. And you're going to sense this even more when you're put with, you know, completely surrounded and with not a lot of resources to draw on. I think that that cross-cultural experience is good. If nothing better, assign them going to just to go observe something that, you know, an ethnic celebration of some kind or ethnic church or whatever, if they don't, if you can't do a live-in kind of thing. But I think that there's no excuse for us not to force people to, at the emotional level, have to come to grips with who they are culturally, and some of the hang-ups that they might have to face when they get to the field, or most likely will face, to begin facing while they're here. Questions or comments or suggestions? Yes.
Yeah, I'm a facilitator in this whole kind of thing, and I find it's actually quite straightforward when I'm dealing with fellow Westerners to be able to try and help them to cope with their ethnicity and so forth. Because I can come at them from understanding basically their culture, even if it's European.
Mm-hmm.
There's enough overlap.
Oh, you work on sending people to Europe. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that I'm working with somebody from England or America. I'm trying to learn how to live in Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
But things have become a little bit more complex for someone in my role, working beside a Korean who's now with Armenian, trying to adapt to Thailand, because I don't understand Korean culture. I've never been in Korea. I have very few Korean friends so far.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but I've had Koreans in my class, and I've had Japanese in my class, my language learning class. They're rigid. They're rigid, just like we are. They need as much cultural breakdown and recognizing what makes them different from others as we do. You know? Uh-huh.
So what kind of things can you begin to do to help them say that you're trying to help them with their particular perspective, not with your reaction?
Oh, because I don't know their perspective, you're saying. Okay, well, I ask a lot of questions. People like to participate. And so if I say, we find this high on our value list, what would your society do? You know, are people more important than money? Are is event more important than time? You know, begin to ask them to sort out some of these things that every culture has to be somewhere on the continuum, and we're bound to not be the same in many things. Family is a big thing, that the Korean family structure and loyalty to family is quite different from you know, European or American. So if you've got that kind of thing, learn from each other, you know, in your orientation or your pre-field training or whatever. That's really a richer experience because you can begin to illustrate from real life. When I had Koreans and Japanese in my language learning class, that I felt like that really enriched it because, you know, we could use a lot of real illustrations, not just off the top of my head, you know, or out of books, but we could find things that were different in their society. Anyone else want to contribute on that or ask another question? But I can see how it does make it more complex. It's a bigger task. You know, you do have it. I'm not brushing it off lightly. But you will grow, and you'll probably keep getting Koreans, right? So once you get that over that initial, beginning to understand what makes up the Korean way of life and how they're going to have to adjust and maybe some of the difficulties. Talk to some Korean missionaries who've been out there. What do they find hard to tolerate in the local societies? That might give you some ideas where there's worldview difference or something that you could capitalize on.
Just to back up, we've done this quite a little bit in our British SIL, where we have people from all over. You know, have Korean and African and various countries, lots of folks from all around Europe, British, once in a while some Americans. And the structure is cut out lots of lectures.
Mm-hmm.
And rather put in this sharing, Lord goes to basic values.
Mm-hmm. Mayors, our mayors, and
basic values, and then go off from there.
Mm-hmm.
And it really takes off.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very frustrating because you don't do it.
You're not in control. You don't know all the answers yourself. But you learn a lot. Yeah. Yes, the mayor's, I think his basic values are in Sherwood Langenfelder and Mayor's Ministering Cross-Culturally book. So if anybody hasn't come across those, you might want to look up that book, because that is a good list of contrasting values that you can work with and see quite a variety if you've got people from different societies. Okay? Yes? So we may need to be changing what we're doing, you know, a bit as we get those people involved. I had somebody from a Vietnamese pastor in my summer school class, and I learned so much from him. It was intercultural communication. He was telling me how upset his people get with the way whites handle the Bible. He says he sees TV pastors flipping it around like this, you know, and he says they lay it down, you know, whatever, and he says, you just don't treat the Bible that way, for where he comes from. And here they're meeting for church in a white church, and the white church says, we need to get together, and so they're meeting once a month or once every 6 weeks together, but he says his people are so uncomfortable. And when they sit in church, the women have to sit next to the men, or mixed in, or the women up front, and with men sitting behind them looking at them. And there are just so many things that make him uncomfortable. And he can't tell the white pastor this, you know, because something about superiority and whatnot, and the white pastor doesn't have any problems. I mean, aren't we meeting together? And so, you know, we've just got a lot of unpacking to do. And so I think you as facilitators need to keep your ears open and learn and you know, and then incorporate whatever you can in helping people get ready to go another place, because we are uncomfortable in cross-cultural situations, whether it's us there or from Korea to Thailand or wherever. Here's the one by Kim. Kim Young-Yun Kim, Communication and Cross-Cultural Adaptation. And then this is just a general textbook by Carly Dodd that I use for intercultural communication. And it goes through nonverbal, and it has a good section on the anthropological elements, you know, elements of culture and those things. So if you, you know, need a general book to kind of be a guideline for some of the things that need to be covered, I'd recommend either of those books. And then the other one was Lingenfelder and Mayer's Ministering Cross-Culturally. Okay, well, thank you.